United States against Kramer is our next argument this morning. Mr. Eisenberg.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Mark Eisenberg. I represent Jan Kramer in this matter. We're here today because we believe that Mr. Kramer was sentenced based on unreliable information. And I think the two cases that I cited in the brief, Henderson and Beeler, talk about what factors you have to consider in determining whether the information that was received by the judge is reliable. They talk about whether there was police testimony to corroborate other buys.
Counsel, normally when we talk about reliability, we're talking about hearsay, whether the hearsay has sufficient guarantees of reliability. But here, I gather, we are talking about live eyewitness testimony, which the judge credited. There's no question here, then, other than whether the judge's decision to credit the testimony was clearly erroneous. What makes this clearly erroneous?
If you want me to focus in on that, then I guess the issue is would be one of the factors was the certainty that the witness testified about at the trial. And the certainty here from Mr. Norsetter is uncertain, totally. Let me just give you some examples. And we're not really dealing with Michelle Hughes here because, as the government said at page 19 of its brief, Hughes was there. They did not rely on Hughes' testimony to calculate the weights. So we're relying totally on Norsetter's testimony. How is Norsetter's testimony uncertain? Well, in the pre-sentence report, he talks about a number of transactions, three with Pam Marshall, the co-defendant, for a couple ounces here. He talks about a time when Mr. Kramer showed up at his house with 2 ounces, and then he talks about three more times that they went to Eli's, the drug defendant, or the drug supplier, and got more ounces. So that's kind of what he tells up till the time of sentencing. But then at the sentencing hearing, he's totally different. And what does he say there? And by the way, the judge
Counsel, you're basically making the kind of argument you would make to the trier of fact. What you have to argue to us is the district court's findings are clearly erroneous. Now, it's almost impossible for an appellate court to say that a district court's decision to credit live testimony is clearly erroneous. What might make it clearly erroneous is that it describes physically impossible events, or it conflicts with indisputable physical evidence, or something like that.
Well, I was getting there, Judge. At the sentencing, Mr. Norsetter said there were 7 to 8 trips total that he went on. He then said that there were 3 of those trips were included during the time that he took the cocaine to Pam Marshall's house. So we have three of the 7 trips include Pam Marshall. He could never remember the weights. He didn't know the weights for sure because he said he never weighed it by himself. He was not sure of the total weights. He couldn't give the exact dates. And he said it could have been 2 ounces each time. Okay, then I asked him, well, all right, if there were 7 to 8 trips, and he said 7 trips for sure, and 3 of them were with Marshall's, did you ever go to Eli's house and not get drugs? Yes, I did. How many times did that happen? 3 to 4. So now we have the most 4 trips to Eli's house to pick up drugs. But the judge went and found 6 trips that he went to Eli's to pick up drugs. That's clearly erroneous based on the testimony that was made at the sentencing. I argued at sentencing, okay, 4 trips. Norsetter said 2 ounces per time. That's 226.8 grams. Plus the 225 that were seized gave us 451 total. But the judge said, no, there's 6 trips that he went to get drugs from Eli's. And we know that the trips are the only thing that was important here was because the AUSA kept saying at the sentencing, well, we have the amount seized from him on the day of the seizure, and then on the day of the arrest, and then we have the rest of it based on Norsetter's testimony about the times he went to get the drugs from Eli with Kramer. Well, that couldn't be more than 4 anyway, but the judge found there was 6. That's where I think this is clearly erroneous. That's really my argument. There's some other issues here, but really the uncertainty that Norstetter testified about at the sentencing, there was no certainty. And therefore the judge made a guess by saying there were six trips when there really could have been no more than four. I hope that answers your question. At least I tried to. I did want to address one other issue real quick, and that was the issue at the end of the reply brief, and I'm sorry I didn't put it in the original brief, about the judge agreeing to allow him to enter the drug program in the prison, and never saying anything about he couldn't earn good time for that, and then in the judgment said he was not allowed to earn good time. My reply brief adequately discusses that issue. I just want to make sure this court didn't omit it in its decision. That's all I have. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Rose.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, just to address the last issue that was raised in the reply brief for the first time, the court's longstanding rule that arguments raised in the brief for the first time, reply brief won't be considered, would obviously be applicable here. However, even if the court wishes to consider that, it's still a non-issue, simply because, one, silence of the oral pronouncement was not contradictory of the written order. It just simply, at the best, was ambiguous. And indeed, the two cases cited by the defendant make that clear, where it does is create an ambiguity. You can look, for example, for the written order, which is explicit. And the second reason that it really shouldn't be viewed seriously by the court is that it begs the question. The question is, what does that silence mean? Well, we can't answer what that silence means by simply saying it means something. It's silent. And the court made it clear in the written order. So there's really no issue there. In terms of the court's determination, the Galbraith decision by this court made it clear that the testimony of one witness, even a liar, an informant paid by the government, or even if it's uncorroborated, if it's heard by the court makes that determination to give it the credibility it needs, then the court can correctly rely upon it in making its calculation of the drug amounts. Here, Mr. Phil Norstetter that testified on those drug amounts, testified before the grand jury, appeared live before the court at sentencing, was corroborated by Ms. Hughes, and indeed was corroborated by the amount seized from the defendant on November 8th. Those amounts, as calculated by the court and determined, exceeded the 500 grams necessary to give him the mandatory minimum sentence that he received and was imposed. This time, unless the court has any further questions, I can sit down. Sure. Yes, sir.
I just wondered, is there any difference between those four and six trips?
It makes no difference, no.
What is the deal?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what he's saying. What totally, I addressed the dispute about the trips in the brief. The issue about whether or not there were four trips or more trips, the informant testified to a total of approximately 7 to 8 trips. Included within those 7 to 8 trips would be the amounts that were related to what was referred to as the breakup of the cocaine at Pam Marshall's house, which was another co-defendant. Those amounts and that figure there was indeed calculated as part of the total amount, but there was still a sufficient evidence of other trips other than the instances at Marshall's house. I believe it was two instances at Marshall's house where the cocaine was broken up. If there are no further questions, I'll sit down now.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Eisenberg?
The total amount was 7 trips. clearly at page 13 of the transcript, I asked him, did you ever go there and not get any cocaine? He, yes. Yes. How many times? 3 or 4. Okay, 2 ounces times 4 trips put us at the 226 grams, and when you add that to the 225 grams he was seized with, it comes up to a total of 451. There's a lot of speculation on maybe he was dealing other times, but that's the total. That's extremely significant because if we take 6 trips at 2 ounces of crack, that's going to put him over the 500 grams. Because he was a repeater, now he's looking at a minimum mandatory 10 sentence, whereas if he had just been found guilty on the 451 grams, he would have been sentenced to significantly less than this. So it makes a substantial difference whether there's 6 trips or 4. That's all I had. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. And we appreciate your willingness to take the appointment in this case and the assistance you've been to both your client and us. The case is taken under advisement.